permission, should you choose to accept it, is to
go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Roll for initiative.
From the silver screen to the GM screen, Never Say Die asks, what can we learn from movies to enhance our role-playing game experience? This season, we're getting the band back together with heist films, where a mastermind hatches an elaborate, usually non-violent plan to get a MacGuffin from a difficult location with the help of two or more specialists. I'm Rafe Telsch, film critic.
And I'm Drew Meyer, gaming enthusiast. And in this intermission episode, we'll explore anything we missed in our Ocean's 11 episode, discuss movies and games that have caught our attention, check out some of our listener feedback, and Rafe, Rafe will select the next heist film that we will be reviewing and gamifying. But first, the 96th Academy Awards aired 2 days ago at the time of recording, and since Rafe and company just released a preview episode, you know what? Why not? Let's take a brief moment to reflect on the good, the bad, the ugly of the most recent Oscars. Rafe, you're the movie guy.
I am. This was my cup of tea. This is my favorite time of year. From the moment the Oscar nominees are announced until the night of the broadcast, and I am when the nominees were announced, I had watched 4 out of the 39 feature-length films that had been nominated. And when we finally recorded that preview episode, I had watched, I think, 25.
That's impressive. Yeah. I've watched 3, maybe 3, possibly 4. There's sometimes a film will get nominated, like kind of a smaller film that's kind of just gets shoved in there, but usually only go to theaters to watch, you know, big explosive films.
Right.
Listen to the episode with the preview. Loved it. Helped me win my works library Oscar ballot. Did pretty good on the ballot, I gotta say.
Nice.
I missed a couple of ones, and so I'm kind of curious about your thoughts on the overall on the winners. Were there any kind of big surprises for you as far as who walked away with the award?
Well, I changed a couple of my votes at the last minute when I filled out the official ballot, for prognosticators. And I ended up 15-8 on my picks. I had Barbie for a lot of the technical categories, costumes, hair, that kind of stuff. And those went to Poor Things, which, as we kind of talked about on that episode of the podcast, Poor Things is kind of expert level Barbie. It's very similar in theme and idea. But I had expected Barbie to kind of rack it up because I figured the Academy would feel, the voting members would feel bad that they were giving the bigger awards to Oppenheimer. So that kind of blew me away. And I really thought Lily Gladstone was going to win Best Actress. I thought, here's the chance. You're making history already with the first Native American woman in a leading role nomination. Let's go ahead and finish making history by giving her the award. So I was very surprised by Emma Stone winning. But all
so
in all,
was Emma Stone.
Yeah, I know. All in all, I was pretty happy about the honest truth is, with the exception, we talked kind of about Maestro being a problem in that episode. But other than Maestro, this was an excellent batch of, well, other than Maestro and one other, this was an excellent batch of movies. Like, it could have gone completely against the way that I voted, and I still would have been happy because the movies were excellent.
You know, it's interesting. I've almost taken pride every year in not having watched a lot of these films because I grew up in a cultural desert in Myrtle Beach. There was just not a lot of places to watch foreign films or fancy films or anything like that. Merchant Ivory, what, you know? And so I just got out of the habit of watching every single film that gets nominated. But this year, I don't know what it was in the air. It just seemed like everyone was talking about movies. A lot of my friends on social media were. It wasn't just, you know, my movie nerd friends, but just everybody. And I thought, next year, I'm going to at least try to watch all 10 of the Academy Award Best Picture nominees. I just think I want to be a part of the conversation. I need to be a little, you know, a little more movies, less games. Not less games, but like just more movies. All right, how about the ceremony? And I'm just going to go ahead and say this. I didn't get a chance to watch it, mainly because it was a special streaming service, which I didn't have. I did jump on YouTube every once in a while. I've pirated broadcasts of it, you know, like every 5 minutes it would get taken down. And it became kind of a fun thing, but I didn't get a chance to watch it. But every time I got an announcement, I would go in and watch the acceptance speech. So I got to see the important parts, but right. as far as the overall flow, what did you think of the ceremony?
I've done that one year. I've watched, you know, gone from pirated feed to try and watch them. It is fun. It's also kind of annoying if you really are invested in who's winning, which I usually am. The overall ceremony I thought was excellent. I liked the fact that they started an hour earlier, so that it was, especially because it happened on the same day as daylight saving time shift. So I was really happy that they started an hour earlier. And I mean, they moved through, I think somebody said they did 7 awards in the first hour, or it was 5 awards in the first hour and 7 in the second, but it was like they didn't go, oh, we've got an extra hour to play with. They were just like, this is what we're here for. This is what the audience wants to see. And I mean, it had some frivolity to it, which I think it needs to have. It had some gravitas to it in moments, but all in all, I thought it was a really good telecast this year.
Nice. Was there a moment or a presenter that really kind of stood out for you?
Well, I mean, there were three that everybody is talking about, and I was talking about as well. John Cena was hilarious, and John Cena was hilarious because not only did he do the naked shtick, but the important thing was he was there to present an award, and he didn't make it about him. He didn't make it about the gag. If nothing, it was funnier the fact that he's walking out to the microphone naked and says, costumes, they're really important. But it's bringing the focus back on the fact that he's here to present the costume award instead of, oh, look at what silly thing we did.
Right.
I thought it worked really well. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito talking about being Batman villains and then having the stare down with Michael Keaton was hilarious, even though Michael Keaton wasn't Arnold Schwarzenegger's Batman.
Well, yeah, it absolutely true. And what I loved about it too is, you know, it happened, what, 3 days ago for us, 2 days ago for us, and I have already been sent the meme twice of the Michael Keaton two fingers. And I'm friends with a couple of artists, Batman artists and writers, who have basically said, yeah, expect the two finger come on to show up sometime in the next 6 months. Like,
sure,
that's going to be Batman's thing from now on.
Sure.
So that was pretty awesome. That's two. What's the third?
I'm Just Ken. I mean, like, that's the musical number everybody wanted to see, and it didn't disappoint at all. Did it, you know, it didn't win best song. I didn't think it was going to.
No.
As soon as Thomas corrected me on the podcast about probably the other song from the Barbie movie was going to win, I was like, oh, yeah, and it probably deserves to. So, but the performance was, and it was funny because I'm watching it, and I'm going, man, that dancer looks a lot like Simu Liu. And then I'm like, well, am I being racist by saying Asian guys? No, it was actually Simu Liu. They had Cutiegawa, Simu Liu.
Most of the Kens, I believe, from the movie were there. Yeah. Barbie, by the way, the only movie nominated for Best Picture that I have seen. There's a couple. I mean, the problem is that if you want to watch them not in the theater, I think I looked and I think there's 10 films and 8 separate streaming services. I'm not there.
You need to come visit me. I had access to all of them.
I know. There's something very important that's near and dear to both of us. We'll get that in a moment. I don't want to be too negative, but like, was there something that didn't work for you?
Well, that's actually a good transition because it was the only moment. Well, the in memoriam was. I loved the music. I loved the presentation utilizing all of the screens. It was too busy. And the, you know, they kept the camera pulled back so you saw the screens on the stage as the audience saw them. So you also could see the dancers and you also could see the musicians performing. And it was just too much. It was, and I felt like it pulled a little away from the in memoriam. But the other moment that didn't work for me, and this is just unfortunate, was the winners for visual effects. Was Godzilla Minus One, which we'll talk about here in just a second. But I wish they'd had a translator for the acceptance speech so it didn't come across as just kind of a weird lull in the night as he was trying to kind of break through the language barrier there. And I don't feel like I understood half of what he was trying to say. And I wish they had just had a translator on site that could have taken care of that.
100%. Yeah. And then it's a horrible thing to say. But and I think you're right. And like, it was great for them for that moment. You know, that was definitely one because it also followed the energy from Schwarzenegger and DeVito. Right. Yeah, I get that. I get it. But, you know, you get to see, I still think highlight of the entire evening might have been the Godzilla Minus One team who brought their A game,
right?
With their Godzilla shoes, everyone carrying the figures. They had a golden Oscar Godzilla in a bow tie they brought on stage. I mean, like, even if they had lost, and they weren't going to, but even if they had lost, I think they were having more fun than anybody else.
Oh, sure.
Which let's talk about it. Godzilla minus one. There's a Godzilla movie that has won an Academy Award.
I am so glad you dragged me to the theater to see it, because it probably, even though as much as you gushed about it beforehand, it probably would have ended up kind of flying under my radar as far as like it being re-released minus color. I would have been like, well, I'm going to miss the visual effects, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's a really good movie. Like, it's a really solid Godzilla movie. We have a Godzilla movie that won an Oscar, and this is it, and it deserves to. I mean, it is an amazing film.
It really is. And, you know, sadly, because of the no competition clause that they've got going with Legendary, it is being released on physical media on May the 1st in Japan, but we're probably not getting it until 2025, which is really unfortunate. Oh. Yeah, I know. I think, going to pre-order the Japanese version because that one comes with the Mind's Color. We should also mention, because you did mention that you and I have gone together, it is possible that Godzilla Minus One is the first time you and I have watched a movie together. And if not, it's been 33 years since you and I have watched a movie together. So that was a real treat, Oscar or no.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we normally use this time to talk about movies that we've seen. It's been a little while since we recorded. Rafe, you have watched 25 Academy Award nominated films. Is there something in there that you specifically want to talk about, or was there a film that wasn't nominated that you've seen since last time we recorded that you want to mention?
Oddly enough, I'm going to go off script from that, and I've also been taking, on top of everything else, a graduate school class on the films of Hitchcock. And it's like the first thing I did after I started getting back in that Hitchcock vibe, because we're watching two movies a week for 8 weeks. The first thing I did was like, well, did Hitchcock do a heist film? And sadly, he did not. Mm. But his films are amazing, and he is the creator of the term MacGuffin, which we use in the intro to our show. And I had the absolute pleasure. I've watched some of his lesser known stuff that I had never seen before. I've watched some of his better stuff, his greater known stuff, one of which I had not seen before. The old podcast had done Hitchcock as an Artist of the Month, and we could not find a copy of North by Northwest. And I finally saw that over a decade later. But watching Psycho with my son, who is just now really kind of getting into that film spirit. Like, he watched a couple of the Oscar nominees, and he was really invested in the Oscars as well. And one of my favorite moments of watching it with my son is early in the film when Marion Crane takes
spoilers
the money.
Spoilers for Psycho.
This is less than 10 minutes into the movie. She takes the money, and she's supposed to take it to the bank, and you cut to her in her room packing a bag. And my son goes, well, that doesn't look like the bank. And I said, that's okay, because that's not money. Because in the plot of Psycho, the money is just the MacGuffin. That's all it is. It doesn't have, it's what keeps the story moving forward, but it doesn't have significance beyond that. So having that little joke with him was kind of a fun moment for me. Hitchcock, God, brilliant filmmaker.
Yeah, terrible human being. Just garbage, especially to women. Great filmmaker. I got to say, our mutual friend Mel, who you listened to on the last episode with the predictions, did just an amazing rundown of Psycho on his Tangent 1985 YouTube channel. I highly recommend that. We probably would have put that in the show notes. Really, like, I knew Psycho was good. I enjoyed Psycho, but watching it from his technical perspective just made me appreciate the film even more.
I will check that out.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Dune 2, I mean.
Have you seen it?
I have. Oh, are you kidding me? Oh, yeah.
See, I'm not as big a Dune person.
I am.
I understand that I really need to go back and rewatch part one before I see part two, because they just jump in off the deep end. There's no real recap. There's no, hey, remember, this means this. It's just you're back in the world.
Yeah, I think the first 10 minutes of Dune part two was originally supposed to be the last 10 minutes of Dune part one, and they decided to to change it kind of with that kind of fairly abrupt cutoff. So every year for my birthday, I go to a cinema to see a film specifically so that I can take the ticket and put it in with all the other movies that I watch for my birthday. So I have 30 years worth of movie tickets.
Nice.
For my birthday film. It doesn't always have to happen on my birthday. For my birthday, I watch the Pressburger and Powell film, The Red Shoes, which is one of the most visually stunning films I've ever seen. I said the same as much when we talked about A Matter of Life and Death, also by them. They are two of my favorite filmmakers of all time, and I've only seen three of their films. And I've been told that I haven't seen the best of them, which is insane. But I took my wife to go see Dune 2. But beforehand, she had never read the book. She hadn't seen the 1984 version. She hadn't seen the Sci-Fi Channel original. So a couple of days before, I showed her the first one, thinking that we were probably going to watch it in like three separate nights because it's, you know, 2.5 hour long film. She probably wasn't going to have it. She's not a sci-fi person.
Right.
She loved it. Well, we talked about it for 3 days, and then we went and saw Dune 2, which she was genuinely excited about. We still sit down and talk about Dune 2 at meals. Just something new to talk about. So it's very good. I would also like to recommend Damsel, which is on Netflix. It was just dropped a couple days ago. It is a YA fantasy horror film starring Millie Bobby Brown that flips the script on the damsel in distress. Great cast, great special effects. I think it's a really good gateway into horror.
And I meant to ask you, because you posted that on Facebook that you'd seen that. Have you seen The Princess, which is on Hulu, came out a year or two ago?
I haven't, and everyone is comparing it to that, and so I think I probably need to check that one out. I don't have Hulu, so but it is one of those things that maybe I'll jump in. And then the last thing, this is germane to a conversation you and I have had essentially on and off for 2 years now. I rewatched The Explorers.
Oh, I love that film.
Which is one of my favorite films from my childhood, absolutely. And Rafe, I don't know, season three, we might have to go back to Kids and Bike just so we can talk about that film.
I almost picked it like three different occasions.
I think an argument can be made against picking it. That being said, kind of want to talk about that film. And it really has made me re-look at Kids on Bikes movies that we haven't talked about. So I don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay.
This is a podcast both about movies and role-playing games. Have you any good role-playing game experiences in the last 3 months?
I sadly have not, between, you know, grad school and other stuff going on and working and everything else. Gaming has unfortunately taken a backseat. In fact, my group has not met, did not meet in February for our monthly session, and cannot meet in March. We don't have a date that works for everybody. So I had made some terrain that I was really excited about when we had our January session with terrain crafting that really made me happy. But the only RPG type stuff I've been able to do lately has been the 2024 quest calendar that I mentioned on the podcast months ago, because it has anthropomorphic animals as your characters this year. And my girlfriend and I have been doing that together. We're a couple weeks behind right now due to our busy schedule, but it's been a lot of fun. And it gives a little bit, it's like an appetizer of gaming, you know?
I also got that calendar.
Did you end up getting it?
A single session of it.
Oh, dude.
It's sitting at my desk at work. I was thinking, I'm going to put it on my desk at work and I'll, you know, get like 5 or 10 minutes to play every single day. Work has been busy and I haven't got a chance to. There's a lot more involved than I thought it would be. And that's probably to its benefit. I just have to maybe over a long weekend play catch up and get
great.
Into it. But the art's great and the stories are really cool. I'm sorry that you haven't gotten a chance to play. Hopefully, I have made up for your lost time. So I'll try to be brief, but I have, again, I've mentioned this before, I'm running not one, not two, but three sessions every month for my teens and the 8 to 11-year-olds. It's gotten so popular that I've had to add a third session.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. So for our... It's monthly. So our first session, I wanted something that could last an entire year, but could also feel like a one shot. And so I did a variation on a very popular independent D&D adventure, which is called Grammy's Country Apple Pie, which is fun. Look it up. I highly recommend it. It's a great first level adventure for D&D players and also a really good introductory game for players, because it doesn't have to involve combat. It can be done negotiation. It does allow for a lot of role playing, a lot of strategy. And it's quick. You could play it 90 minutes to 2 hours. At the end of the session, you know, you go off, the adventurers go off and do other things. But I was in a Miyazaki kind of mood, and I I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if at the end of the session, the local barony granted the deed to this abandoned bakery to the players to do with as they will. Ooh. So every single adventure, I have them vote when I find out who signed up, what kind of a thing they want to do. Every adventure is to repair an aspect of this rundown abandoned bakery. So that the end goal is eventually to have a working bakery slash headquarters that the players can gain a little extra money and it will generate some ideas. But I really liked the kind of whimsy that would come from like, oh, our ovens are heated by fire elementals and stuff like that. And it has led to some really interesting storytelling, including our last session, which I was inspired by Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, where they actually had to go into a dream dimension to deal with a kind of Freddy Krueger-esque being who was possessing the house. And so I created dream logic rules, which they loved because they said they were actually getting a little bogged down by D&D's general rules, and the dream logic rules allowed them to do some other stuff. I can maybe post some notes on that one. The previous session, you know, you can't have a bakery that's known for its apple pie if you don't have an apple orchard. The problem was the apple orchard had been tainted by this what I call it, a wandering vampiric dimension. And they had to sever the ties to this dimension to allow the trees to grow. But the dryads that had been the shepherds of these trees, the apple trees, they had to convince the dryads to come back and work with them. And I made them do so because it took place like the day before Valentine's Day by having them write love poetry to the dryads. God. So I had teenagers between the ages of 12 and 18. I gave them a little template, so it wasn't, you know, entirely up to them, but like, you know, I kind of gave them a rhyme scheme, and I allowed them to basically, I would judge this based off of what they included. They'd roll a d20. If they got a certain score or higher, you know, it got a point. If they got a certain number of points, the dryads would come back to them. And they got into it. Like, every single one of them got into it. I've kept them. Their handwriting's atrocious, but the poetry's actually quite beautiful. And they all said afterwards that it was something that they had never expected to have from a role-playing session, and that is exactly the kind of thing that I mean, so it's gotten me really excited about gaming more so.
Nice.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right, well, we are a podcast about role-playing games and movies. So how about podcasts? What's been in your ear that you want to recommend?
Well, you know, I've been listening to The Usual Suspects, a lot of my movie podcasts, but found a new one recently. You know how much I love horror films. I found a new one called Cradle to the Grave. The host, Eric Hansen, has the idea behind it, he's born in 1971, and he's essentially going year by year that he's been alive and he has a list of his favorite top 10 favorite horror films from that year, and he has a guest come on and does, you know, like maybe 10-15 minutes talking about that with that guest. And his guests range from, you know, podcasters to authors to actual musicians and movie stars and stuff. So, you know, when talking about The Thing, why not have an actor who was in The Thing talking about it? So it's been really fun. He's a good host. And it's been kind of nice to use the framing mechanism of the year that it came out to discuss them. So it's really interesting to look at like 10 movies that came out the same year and find similarities and differences between them. And you really get an idea of how the horror genre shifts over time. And I think right now they're at about 1988. And I have not found out what film I'm going to be talking about, but I am going to be joining him for 1991. Ooh. And so I'm quite excited about that because that was one of the first years that I started to go to the... I had a license at that time, so I could go to the cinema by myself. And so because I knew people who worked at the theater, they would allow me to go into horror films and R-rated films. So it was really the time where I was both... I had a job as a video clerk in a store, and I was going to cinema probably two or three times a week. So it's nice to kind of revisit those films. 91's an interesting year. I will say 1991, not one that I'm going to be talking about because it's a horror podcast. 1991, Hudson Hawk.
Yes. Heist movie.
How about you? You just getting a chance to listen to any podcasts?
Nothing really for me. You know, my commute is significantly shorter these days, so I just don't. I have a couple of Usual Suspects that I listen to, and that's about it. I listen to stuff when you recommend it to me, and I want to get back into a couple that you've recommended to me that I've only listened to one or two episodes of. But yeah.
Well, there we go. It's been a bit. Shall we go back into our regular programming with our second opinions?
Yes, absolutely.
On a previous episode, I made a comment that we missed something so incredibly important that I couldn't believe that we missed it. When we were talking about, do you remember the film we were talking about? It was Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11, yes.
There is one thing that I left out that I think is incredibly important, not only to the movie and how the movie is structured, but also for the role-playing aspect of it. And that is, Danny, when he first gets the crew together, informs them that in order to get ready for the heist, they need to prepare 6 tasks. It's a framing mechanism for at least 10 minutes of the movie where they say, number one, reconnaissance.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to see our brothers, you know, doing the recon. 2, power. And that's, of course, we get, getting in to the power stations. 3, surveillance. Different from reconnaissance, but that's Linus getting in there. 4,
right.
Construction, and then we get to see the building of the sets. 5, intelligence, learning everything that they can about not only the potential heist, but everyone who's going to potentially be involved with it. And 6, transport, which of course is kind of the red herring for us.
Right.
But that framework is excellent for the GM to set up the whole outline of the heist. And
right.
it allows the players to, if you go, okay, how are you going with about reconnaissance? They can still come up with what they need to, but you're still getting these kind of 6 parts, equal parts that are important to it. So I think that's something that really should be drawn attention to, both as something that was a really interesting way to set it up within the film, but also to set it up for potential gaming.
Yeah. How did we not talk about that?
Yeah, we had a lot to talk about, just like we do in this episode. And I think we just, you know, we flipped the page in the notes and went past it. Was there anything about the film that we didn't talk about in the last episode that you want to draw attention to?
There is, and it wasn't something I had prepared for the previous episode because it's based on a comment that you made in the previous episode, and that is,
make comments.
You praised the cast of Ocean's 11 and said you couldn't imagine anybody else playing these parts. So I did a little digging. Here are some of the alternative castings for Ocean's 11. 8 of the 11 had people either cast or being considered before they settled on the final cast. So first of
really?
All, Danny Ocean was originally played by Bruce Willis. There's no reason given for why he stepped out of the movie. Bandits came out in 2001, so maybe he left to do that film. But Bruce Willis was the original Danny Ocean. Okay, Linus was written and they had him cast for Mark Wahlberg. Say hi to your mother for me.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is a in the multiverse, there's an alternate version of this film that has Bruce Willis and Marky Mark, and we are richer for it not existing in our timeline.
He left to go do Planet of the Apes, which I think we can all agree was a mistake on his part, but we are the better for it.
Yeah.
Also, at one point, Johnny Depp was being considered for the role of Linus.
It's harder for me to imagine Johnny Depp prior to Pirates of the Caribbean, and I just feel like, is he too old for the part at that time?
I think so, personally.
I think Matt Damon's youth is such an important part of that role that what else you got?
For the Malloy twins, Virgil and Turk, it was originally going to be Owen and Luke Wilson.
Would have been fine.
They stepped away to do the Royal Tenenbaums, and then the consideration was for Joel and Ethan Coen, the filmmakers, to play those parts.
Well, they would have done a better job then than they would now.
For Frank, originally was going to be Danny Glover. He also turned it down to go to the Royal Tenenbaums. And interestingly enough, they were originally going to have Bill Murray appear as a lounge singer in the film, which, you know, was one of his old gags on Saturday Night Live. And he also is in the Royal Tenenbaums. So the Royal Tenenbaums changed the casting of Ocean's 11 entirely.
So I'm going to say that I actually really like both of the brothers.
Yeah.
I even Joel and Ethan Coen would have been really fascinating. And I don't think it would have, I mean, Luke and Owen Wilson, it would have essentially been the same part, but a little bit more, I think it would be interesting to be watching it now because those folks are such much bigger stars than Affleck and Khan that I wonder how we would treat that.
Yeah.
Because it would feel like, why aren't they getting top billing for this? You know, like it's interesting. Yeah, some of that I really like and some of it is, you know, I'm glad that it didn't exist.
For Basher, Ewan McGregor was considered, as was Lenny James, who I think would have been... I mean, I don't think there's any replacing Don Cheadle, but if they had to not do Don Cheadle, I think Lenny James would have been a fantastic pick.
Yeah, and actually, Ewan McGregor would have been really good. At that point in time, he was kind of really real on up and up. I think it would have been too close to Star Wars.
Yes.
It would have been a little weird seeing Obi-Wan do that stuff.
Yeah. Saul Bloom was originally Alan Arkin, who left the project for personal reasons.
Let me tell you.
That would
have
been awesome.
I love me some Carl Reiner, but Alan Arkin would have been amazing.
Don Rickles was also considered.
It's very clear that Don Rickles would have been considered for the part. Also would have been funny, but I don't think it would have had the same level to it. Yeah, interesting.
Reuben originally considered were Sidney Pollack and Dennis France, which that to me is so weird. I just can't see either of them filling. It's an audio podcaster. You can't just make a disgusted facial expression and leave it at that.
It's true. No, I'm trying to imagine the scenes. Doesn't work for me, but at the same time, you know, they're both very accomplished actors, so they probably would have made it work.
Terry Benedict, they considered Warren Beatty, Michael Douglas, and Ralph Fiennes.
All three of them would have been exceptional.
Yeah.
All three of them. It's a part that all three of them were essentially born to play. And especially if you consider Bugsy, right? Like
right.
the whole part with Bugsy of being able starting the casinos in the middle of the desert, it would have had just an extra layer to it. That would have been fascinating.
Mike Myers was considered, but we don't have any indication as to what role he was being considered for. And the movie was originally not being directed by Steven Soderbergh. Brett Ratner was being considered as the director for the film. Yeah, I know.
That just opened my mouth a little bit.
That's a completely different movie.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
That's,
so thank you, Royal Tenenbaums, for giving us.
Right. Oh, yeah. And what's lovely is, you know, it's not like Planet of the Apes where one movie suffered so that another one could grow. We actually got two really exceptional films out of that. I mean, the Tenenbaums is, you know, we have the cast Oscar, right? The special Tenenbaums would have walked away with that that year for sure.
Yes.
For sure.
Well, but Wes Anderson won his first Oscar ever this year and for a short film.
Which is interesting. Yeah.
Right.
I do want to watch that. Henry Sugar, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Yeah, I'll get around to that one. Actually, what I have been watching on Netflix is Love, Death, and Robots.
Love that show. Dude, you're watching it out of order. You started with the third season. The third season has a follow-up episode to a first season episode written by John Scalzi.
Yeah. It's exceptional.
It is.
I have not found a bad episode.
No.
I'm almost done with the first season. I will be done at that point in time. But there's a couple that have given me some really good role-playing game ideas.
Sure.
Bad Traveling, by the way. Just really exceptional story. Okay. For reasons, this next segment has gotten even more complicated than it was originally.
Oh, let's go ahead and talk just briefly about it. I think it's fair to go ahead. We announced, in fact, that we were going to use probably Everyday Heroes as our system to stat characters for this season. If you have been paying attention to gaming news over the past month, Evil Genius Games has not been painted in the best of light. In the past month, the company has some significant problems that resulted in a company of 30 people dropping down to 7 people. Personally, this affects me because not only did I push the idea of Everyday Heroes as our statting thing, but I was and still tentatively am signed up to run their organized play program. But morally, given some of the allegations against the company, it's given me pause. Now, I have talked with some of their remaining staff about some of my concerns, and I'm active in their Discord, kind of trying to get a feel for the vibe. But what we decided was, given it's kind of like my old World of Warcraft podcast, we don't like to promote things that we can't ethically believe in. And I'm not at a point right now where I feel comfortable promoting Evil Genius Games or Everyday Heroes. But we already statted our characters using that system, so I think today's stats are going to talk a little more about mechanics that you'd find in Everyday Heroes. But for the future, our plan is to kind of go with more of a generic D20 system and then kind of work from that.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually gave up, not gave up on working on my heist game. I just took a little pause from it because it's just other projects were happening. I'm still creating a heist slash spy game that is using the Kids on Bike system. So I am going to call it Kids on Shades. It is not officially, like Doug and John have said, I could do it. Just don't sell it. Right. I'm still working on it, but you know. So yeah, we're going to go with Everyday Heroes. Would you like to start or should I start?
So we, as usual, and it's funny, we have a document that we keep track of, like what we're going to talk about and that kind of stuff. And inevitably what happens is Drew puts everything that he's going to talk about in there, and I don't put anything in it so that I can surprise Drew with my stuff. But as usual, we took kind of different routes on this because I made mine a level one character, and you made yours a level seven character. So I might need to level mine up a little bit beforehand. Why don't you kick us off?
Okay. I drafted Saul Bloom, right? So he's a con artist, and he's and specifically an elderly and a veteran con artist, which is one of the reasons why I made it not a level seven character. It made me realize that I don't love staged level characters for this kind of work. Because all level seven characters, for the most part, have the same kind of skills when you're using a system, and you can tweak it, but you're kind of expected to, like, you should be able to do X. Whereas in Ocean's 11, you hire these individuals because they are so specialized in something.
Yeah.
So if you want to go the agnostic route, you just take whatever class is closest to a con artist. So which means you're going to want higher mental stats and charisma stats, you know, whatever those are. And because Saul is much older than all the other characters on the team, you're going to want to have lower physical skills. I'm not saying that older people can't be, you know, brawny and tough, you know, but that's not who he is. Really want to emphasize the skills, and if you're going to do that, impersonation and impressions are important. If there's a jack-of-all-trades special skill or characteristic that your system is using, you definitely want to get that, because when you're doing an impersonation character, con man, they should be able to roll with whatever you've got going on. So knowing a little bit of everything is going to be really important. This is a character also who has a reputation. That's a good thing and a bad thing. Reputation means that you're going to have friends in places. People are going to know who you are. You're going to be able to maybe get information or supplies that you could use. But also, Saul Bloom! you're going to know folks, and you're going to have connections that could potentially blow it. So if I'm using the Everyday Hero system, I'm using the Charming Manipulator. I made it level 7 because he is, in fact, a veteran character.
Right.
Background of social butterfly, and as a profession, a criminal. I gave every single physical skill something that would have a negative modifier. So -1 in strength, -1 in dexterity, -1 in constitution. I probably should have done even lower in constitution because, you know, we are using a D20 system. But I gave a high level intelligence, high wisdom, and even better charisma. I don't love playing characters with really high stat modifiers. I actually like negative ones because I love it when things go wrong. It makes it so much more interesting, especially when you're dealing with a character who is like a charismatic or intelligence person, because I don't like my character's good at everything. Those are boring characters for me. Skills, deception, insight, knowing what people are doing, intimidation. If you'd say that again, you're not going to wake up tomorrow. Perception, because he's kind of a lookout person. Performance, persuasion, social sciences, which is a Everyday Heroes rather than a, you know, your typical D20, and then streetwise. They allow feats in this game, so impersonator. I had a skill that gave bonuses to insight and perception, skill that gave bonuses to performance and streetwise. There's a special feat called whale, meaning that you have access to money, which I love because, you know, we get this idea that both Reuben and Saul help to kind of bring the boys up, right? Like they even mention specifically, they kind of taught them what they know. This is more for Reuben than it is for Saul, but you get a feeling that Saul's been in there from the beginning.
Sure.
So Saul's got access to the money, even if he doesn't, you know, he doesn't probably spend it as much. So yeah, I think that's kind of covers the character. I think anyone could basically play Saul Bloom using any system, using that as a kind of a guide.
Okay. Well, I had Basher Tar, and kind of going the same idea. I mean, he's a demolitions expert, but the more I got to thinking about it, when we first see him in Ocean's 11, he is almost kind of a mastermind of his own. Now, his thing doesn't go off very well, but that kind of originally it bothered me because I knew the skills that are going to relate well to a demolitions expert, whether it's in Everyday Heroes or D&D or anything like that. They usually don't have a demolitions skill. Shadowrun had one, but almost nothing else does. So the traits that are going to tie to that tend to be intelligence and dexterity. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, I don't want him to be too intelligent because he's not very, oh, wait, no, he is kind of a mastermind for his own crew. They're just not as good as Danny's crew. So I was like, okay, well, then I'm good with him being intelligent. Because that does work. So I put him with a high dexterity, high intelligence, average constitution, a little above average wisdom and charisma, and then a low strength because I didn't see any benefit to him. I didn't feel like that. I felt like that was true to his character. He is somewhat charismatic. He's not a dummy, but he's not dexterous to the point that he's going to be taking over for the
Linus.
The acrobat. But he's
Oh yeah. The amazing man.
But so I did give him, as far as skills, again, this is using Everyday Heroes system, computers, deception, mechanics, perception, security, sleight of hand, and vehicles. Because kind of with the same, I made him also a smart hero. I went with the engineer class because that was the closest I could find to it, with a background of on the run and a profession of crime as well. I really originally wanted a profession of that I felt like had some military connection to give him like access to those tools, but that doesn't jive with the character that we see in Ocean's 11. We don't know that he has any kind of military background.
True.
So I moved away and I was just like, well, crime works the best. So
yeah, and they're all criminals. I mean, let's face it. We really stress that they're all criminals. It's funny. The comment I was going to make, I realize, is actually more of a Ocean's 12 comment, which is I would up his charisma probably by one and give him performance because of we know that he is intellectually intelligent.
Right.
And emotionally intelligent, I meant to say. Emotionally intelligent because he brings Reuben back from the brink by writing up this poetry. You know, like he has a deep soul, which isn't... important for Ocean's 11, so you know we got to stick with kind of what we know. I think it's a really good way of designing the character, and I certainly think if you leveled him up a little bit, you know, I that's the thing is I gave Saul a high level but low stats to balance the fact that he's been doing the profession forever, but he's not good enough to do it on his own. He needs to be a part of a team. Yeah, I think that works out really well.
Yeah.
It's fun. I love doing that. It's the idea of creating these characters. I should mention, and I'm just going to do this super quick, on social media, on our Facebook page, I have mentioned our heist somatic. These are the tropes that are most frequently found in heist films. I came up with 24 of them, just enough for all the spaces on a bingo card minus the free space. Not only have I listed all 24 of these on our Facebook page, but I've also sent a link to a bingo card generator that you can do up to like, I think 15 or 20 cards. So if you would like to play bingo along with us starting with the film that Rafe is going to pick at the end of this episode, you can do that. You can generate a card with all of these things. And I have watched a couple of heist films since last time I recorded. And it's amazing. I would say of the heist films I've watched, at least half of them start with the mastermind just getting out of jail. It's almost a joke at this point in time. But it's for every heist film I see that was created before Ocean's 11, you can see where someone went while writing Ocean's 11. We need to include that. We need to include that. And so I've listed all those. It's interesting as a read just to see the tropes that exist within the genre. But also if you want to play a game of bingo along with us. And again, what I recommend is create one card and do it for every single movie that we're going to be talking about. And just see if you win. There's no prize.
Yeah.
So
no, and we can't give a no prize because that's copyrighted by Marvel. Yeah, so
by Marvel.
Well, speaking of our Facebook page, we do get feedback from our listeners that we covet and we fawn over comments that are made because it's nice to know that we're not just putting this out there into the ether. So, Drew,
which we would still do even if no one made any comments.
I think Drew actually records a podcast every day of the week and just wonders why he doesn't have more listeners because he doesn't actually release it. But that's neither here nor there. Drew, you want to share with us some of the comments that have been made, especially through Facebook over the time since we recorded Ocean's 11.
Yeah. So Lewis responded, once we mentioned that we were doing heist films, and Lewis says, thinking about what possible heist films may be included in this season made me compile my own short list. And this is a short list. I figured members could share their expectations and suggestions, and when members, I'm guessing he's talking about members of the actual Facebook group, and I would love that. Please, please, please do. I'd be kind of curious what everyone says towards what we hear this season. So here are my top five in the heist film category. Number one, Rafifi. Lewis, yes. Number two, Sneakers. Lewis,
yes.
Yes. Three, Heist, and this is the 2001 written by Mamet starring Gene Hackman. Lewis, possibly. Number four, D&D, Honor, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. Lewis, absolutely, yes. Most definitely we're going to be talking about that. Number five, so fascinating, and it's the, it blows my mind. I never would have thought of it in a million years. Number five is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And you're not wrong, Lewis.
No.
You're not wrong. And honestly, while I'm not 100% sure I would choose it, I certainly would applaud anyone else who did, mainly to get any of the bridge crew from the Enterprise on a heist team.
Lewis, Drew cannot hear me right now. I have not picked any of your movies for the next pick.
He gasped for no reason at all. So fast. I'm so excited. While talking about things that our listeners can do along with us, Sarah has decided that she also is going to be drafting. And I love this because every single month, every time we make a selection, she is going to pick a character and she's going to create her team. So we'll have Sarah's team. Maybe we'll draft Sarah's characters as well. And after listening to us, Sarah has decided to draft Linus. So she says, though I'm sure I'll regret skipping over Rusty, I'm going to go with Linus as the pickpocket specifically, given his background and learning potential. He's got the makings of a mastermind, but he needs some more experience.
Yes.
It's a great pick. And I was watching a heist fairly recently. I don't remember which one it was in which the pickpocket played such an important part. Oh, no, I do. Oh, yes. I'm not going to tell you what it is because it definitely is potentially one of my picks down the road where pickpocket is huge. But if you want to be like Sarah, and you should because she's amazing, and you would like to draft along with us, join us on Facebook. Let us know after the episodes drop which of character from that film that you would like. And start, please, with Ocean's 11. Go ahead and start up with that one. I would love to have a running tab, and we will mention your team on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
All right, Drew, one of the other elements that we announced this season is our Steal a Soundtrack component, which, by the way, you need to start and I need to start a Spotify playlist for that. I have not done that yet. I need to fix that. Okay. So I'm the slacker is what you're saying. I get it. Graham responded to our idea about the Steal a Soundtrack saying, an extra layer to the draft that makes a soundtrack so excited. Yeah, so are we. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think I came up with it, but now
you
I don't
absolutely
remember.
Came up with it. 100%, sir.
In my head. Been,
ladies and gentlemen, this is what grad school does to you. Wait, did I come up with that brilliant idea? I don't know.
Yeah. Graham also commented on my draft pick of Basher that I'd have taken Basher too, but mostly because I've said I want to be Don Cheadle when I grow up since 1997.
Don't we all?
Yeah, I kind of want to be Don Cheadle too. Let's be honest.
Yeah. And in addition, because Graham is Graham, when we dropped our Welcome to the Party episode, his first response is Eyes Wide Shut a Christmas movie? Well, I mean, it does discuss members of a family deciding whether or not going through their problems at Christmas time. So, you know.
I'm not supporting that one. Okay.
And my buddy Ryan responded, I love season two of Never Say Die. Thank you. We had one episode. Your pick of Carl Reiner's character is fantastic.
Which
I agree.
I'm
very happy with it. I almost feel like nothing else could happen. And I just know that I've got Carl Reiner on my team. You know, who doesn't want Carl Reiner on the team? Over on Twitter, Maggie Baker, for the mother of the apocalypse, the creator of the Powered by the Apocalypse system, just said, hey, I'm going to give you a nickname. Who wants a nickname? And of course, I'm I used the Twitter account under our Never Say Die, and I said, oh, please, please, please. So far, our podcast for 2024 has been given the nickname of Endurance of Legends. And honestly, we both need endurance and work with legends, so I think it's very appropriate.
Nice.
Hey, Rafe.
Yes.
Remember how I didn't have podcast homework?
I know. I do remember. I think I accused you of sliding it through.
Remember how I was going to completely drop it and you convinced me to keep it?
Yes.
Are you ready for your podcast homework?
I am.
So we'll do podcast homework for our intermissions. Anyone else can, of course, respond with their thoughts to the podcast homework. I'm going to try and be more specific with these and make them less all-encompassing. So here is your homework. In Ocean's 11, the crew has to break into a high-tech secured location within a popular tourist destination. Surrounded by people. So my question to you, Rafe, and the listeners is, what popular location, either in real life or fictional, do you think would make a fun and or challenging spot to hold a role-playing game? Or, if you were making a movie heist. This can be either as a game master or player. So okay. This can be a specific location that does exist. So, you know, don't just say Space Vegas. Don't say Vegas, it's been done. But yeah, so any location. So I think that should be fun. We'll talk about that one next time. Next time we do an intermission, the intermission, of course, being for the movie that Rafe is going to tell us about now.
Well, Drew, you made this one challenging. It's Turnabout's fair play, I suppose, because we started our first season, our Kids on Bikes season, with The Goonies, which is like right. The apex of the Kids on Bikes movies. And then you had to pick a movie to follow that up with. And I at the time was just like, oh, you're being silly. Uh-huh. And now I'm like, we picked Ocean's 11 to start off this right. season, which is arguably the apex. It may take a lot of its ideas from other movies. It may be referential, but it is in many ways kind of the apex movie for heist films. So how do you follow that up? Because almost anything I bring to the table is going to feel lesser by comparison. So even though we are early on in our season, I decided to kind of go askew a little bit. Because we talked about very early on that heist films, while they tend to have kind of this idea of, I mean, and we just had that excellent list of, you know, of course, we start with Ocean's 11 and Rafifi, which I know you love. I've not seen yet. Sneakers and Honor Among Thieves and that kind of stuff. And Honor Among Thieves is kind of what I'm talking about, because it is a heist film, but it's not a traditional heist film.
Correct.
And I wanted to go in a non-traditional direction. And I wish we had recorded this closer to us getting together to see Godzilla, because uh-huh. you and I had a conversation in the parking lot after the movie where you brought up a specific person's name. And you're racking your brain right now trying to remember. But we were discussing Gareth Edwards. And so for my pick, we are going with Gareth Edwards' Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, which is a non-traditional film for heist movies because it is set in the Star Wars universe, but it is a heist film nonetheless.
Can I tell you what my draft pick is going to be? I
whoever
love
you,
it.
Whoever you pick, they're dead.
Not if they're in the prequels, they're not. Yeah, I think that's brilliant. As soon as you said Gareth Edwards, that's brilliant. I'm excited, mainly because it's a film that I love. I genuinely like, not just as a heist film, but actually kind of as a Star Wars film and outside of that. And I've kind of needed an excuse to go back and watch it because I clearly watched it in the theaters and I watched it again right after I watched Andor, which I think is...
And I was going to say bonus points if you rewatch Andor as part of this as well.
You know, it's funny. We mentioned Dune 2 and how I was very surprised that my wife loved it. She loves Andor. I think she even liked it more than I did, which is surprising and saying a lot because I really enjoyed it. So, I mean, I just shouldn't say enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good series. It's kind of a bummer. It does make me want to rebel. And I'm really excited about this. So I think good pick. Very good pick.
I've been sitting on it for a while.
I bet. It's on my list of. I'm looking at my list on my wall, and it's like, which one of us is like paying heist chicken? Which right. one of us is going to drop Rogue One? I'm glad. I'm really glad that you kind of jumped for the non-traditional choice really early on, because it also kind of gives us room to breathe and play around with the genres.
Right.
Because there are a lot of non-traditional heist films that are heist. You know, like on their surface, don't seem like it. And I think this is great. This is very cool. And I'm looking forward to discussing it.
So what we do want to mention is our new plan regarding the podcast release. The plan is, and we know in heist films, always things always go according to plan. The plan is to have our first episode, our primary movie discussion and gamification episode out on the 1st of the month, and to have our intermissions out on the 15th of the month. So that is our plan for now. And we're hoping that by setting definitive dates instead of kind of the way we've tackled it until now, that'll help us manage our time a little better and be able to sit down and record things in a reasonable fashion.
Yeah. I mean, you know, life gets in the way, and it's one of those things that life is always going to take priority over a podcast, and I think it's going to be as close to the 1st and as close to the 15th. But it does give us a kind of a date to shoot for, where it's sort of like, maybe it didn't show up today? We'll post on Facebook, hey, you know, I know it's supposed to come out today. It's going to be a day late, that kind of a thing, like where you can still look for it. I think it'll be a lot better for everyone involved except for Rafe, who has to edit. I get the easy part.
All right. So join us in roughly 2 weeks for our discussion of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Until then, you can find the podcast on all podcatchers. You can email us at the Never Say Die Podcast, all jammed together, the Never Say Die Podcast at gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Never Say Die Cast. Please join our group there. We love talking with people about movies and games.
We absolutely do. We are on X. At Never Say Die Cast. Thanks to Chris Talent for our pulse-pounding theme song and Megan Daly for our iconic show artwork. And if you've liked what you've heard, why not leave us a 5-star review? It helps others find the show, and it makes us feel loved and wanted.
Yeah. And remember, even if your movie barely escaped having Bruce Willis show up as Eddie Hawkins and lead Hudson Hawks 11 on a heist, never say die.